condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP futures down 70. Yeah, 70. NASDAQ futures down 300. 300. These guys were up 320 yesterday morning. We were doing the show. They turned around in an incredible move during the day to be down 140. Now they're down another one. They're down another 300, so let's see. 440 and 320. 780-point move since yesterday morning. Ouch. Interesting stuff. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm all right, but, I'm starting a new workout regimen because the president is reinstating the presidential fitness program. How many sit-ups and push-ups can you do?
More on the push-ups.
That's three to two.
You probably still do 20 push-ups.
Man, that's the last couple of months. I
should
don't
be
think
50.
I could.
Should be 50, but it's 20.
How about your mile time? What are you going to do in the mile?
God. We better use a sundial for that. So, Kevin, how should I feel about the world as I just get in my truck this morning and drive in, minding my own business, and... I hear some ad for ICE agents. Bonuses, pay off your student loans, and all kinds of crap. Okay, this is from the people that don't want anybody's student loans paid off. Then I pull into the parking lot where they have a hooch joint.
But the ICE agents don't want anybody's student's loan paid off?
I'm saying the administration's not big on forgiving student loans, but they're going to pay them off for ICE. Seem to have about 9 million motorcyclists going down the expressway now at this hour in the morning. I don't know those guys got up this early. I count like a couple of hundred. Not only that, they're loud as hell. So I pull in the parking lot, and there's a huge bus in there because there's a hooch joint in that building. So now because of the Lollapalooza and the gazillion young people going by... they don't even need to want them to go into the store. They want them to be able to buy the hooch right in the parking lot. Are we sure we're doing this right?
What's this? What are we trying to do right here?
Well, are we trying to make sure everybody's high as stone at Lollapalooza? These guys are still going by.
I don't know if we're trying to make sure of it, but Lollapalooza's been going on for decades, and I'm pretty sure everybody's higher stoned at it all along.
We've never had.
Not that that makes it good, but it definitely is a fact.
I'm going to say 10 years ago, the 121-year-old in the crowd could not walk into probably six places in the loop and buy a fistful of gummies and pass them out to the younger people. I don't. That's a recent development. It's not.
Well, yeah. The state level legalization of marijuana is a recent development.
And the idea. And one thing about cans of beer, as you and I are somewhat aware of, affiliated with, you can see somebody walking in with a case of beer and tell them not to come in. You can't see somebody walking in with a pocket full of gummies, is the last time I checked. Just saying. This is my morning so far, is all I'm saying. I mean, do we want to make sure that this is, whatever. But at least they can have some good weather, and it's not going to rain. It's not going to be 100 degrees. There's not going to be people falling over from the heat. So that's the good news. So there you go. Did you watch the Hall of Fame game last night?
I watched it for about 5 minutes, but it wasn't very interesting.
No, they tried to make it interesting about the guys that this might be their first time ever, only time ever to put on an NFL uniform. What do you think of the people going in? I heard of those guys, but I don't really know a lot of them. I know the guy, the cornerback, was awful good. Did you hear his the guy in the Eagles, his singular play, like in the Super Bowl? How he said, how's the guy's name, Allen? Edgar Allen? He said his biggest play and his all-star play of his career was during the Super Bowl to break up a fourth and something pass. He said that they had watched the film so much that they knew the quarterback would favor this one guy. So he left his guy totally alone in the end zone and ran over and broke up the other pass. He goes, it was either me being a hero or me being the biggest goat in the history of football for leaving my guy wide open in the end zone. Amazing, huh?
Well, he was playing the tendency.
Yeah, he was playing the tendency. He said, if all of a sudden the guy would have checked the other way for a second, I'd have been the dumbest guy ever in football. But he goes, it just happened to work out. So there you go. Just saying.
Well, you know, you go back to that, what was it, the Woody Allen in Annie Hall, 80% of success is showing up. He showed up at the right place.
Yeah. Well, what did Adam Cartwright, Pernell Roberts say when he was on Bonanza? Virtually all acts of heroism are really acts of quiet desperation. Well, we have Amazon earnings came out. They're down $17. We've got Apple earnings came out, which beat a little bit, so they're up $3.40. Yesterday was one of the most uneven days. When I was doing the show, I was just amazed. I couldn't even really convey it that well when I was doing it. Some stocks, like the Meta, was up $80-some. We had Microsoft up. It was 604 stocks, Kevin. Well, we had to include NVIDIA because they were up. Was up $600 billion in market cap in one morning. In every except for those two stocks, which would have been Microsoft and NVIDIA, every other stock in the Dow was down. I mean, talk about it. I've never seen a concentration day quite like that. And then we were up 300 and some points in the NASDAQ futures. They say now we're down pushing 800 points from there. I don't know if this is going to be a big turnaround. Somehow or another, all these tariffs were flying around again yesterday afternoon and after the close. And there's all these reciprocal tariffs and tariffs being looked at. Can anybody keep track of what these rates are? If you're at the border, trying to bring stuff in, I mean, it seems like they change by the hour.
Last time you go on the computer, you look it up, and it tells you what the rates are.
So who exactly is the inputter of the latest executive order? I know there's. This is actually this is a serious question. I know when I've asked Lou a bunch of times that if somebody actually put out one of these 1,000-page bills, who the hell even puts all that in the congressional record to where anybody even knows to look it up in a law and how it applies and how you find out what the real numbers are? Who keeps track of executive orders? In terms, they're not really laws. I mean, there isn't really a group like that. Or is there? I don't know.
Well, what the president signs are actually printed versions of stuff that's already in the computer. So it's written. It's written in the computer, and then everything's just a keyword search, and you know, they probably index a lot of it. And, you know, this isn't hard technology-wise. That's not hard.
But they're not.
That's pretty basic stuff, and has been for decades.
But something like a tariff. Okay, assuming that he has the right to do it, that I think you can just put in pretty easily. But if it's a something else, I don't know how you. Where does it even go? It's not a law. It doesn't go in. And like the idea about last week, I didn't read the whole thing, but limiting how much colleges can pay athletes. That's an executive order. Now, where does that go? It's not a law. Is it just a? I mean, what is it? I mean, if you look
into a database of executive orders.
But I mean, it's not. There's no penalty to it. Why you don't have to? Why do you have to pay attention to it? Didn't these things start out as
they pay attention to it because where you would go afoul of it is you won't get fined if you set up a collective, because that's what that was aimed at. It was a collective. It didn't care who goes out and sets up a deal on their own with Nike or with Coca-Cola or Dr. Pepper or whomever. So it set up a collective. Where you can run afoul of it is you won't necessarily be fined, but you may not get funding. So it may cut into your funding.
And where does somebody get that power?
Well, I don't know that, you know, I don't know that anybody does get that power. I don't know that it will stand up in court, and I'm sure it will be challenged if it hasn't been already, because nobody has the power in the federal government to curtail our ability to earn money, to earn a living. So I don't think it'll stand up, but you're that's a different question.
Yeah, it's a different question.
Where does it go so that anybody knows what they're going to do with it?
Here's an even crazier question. Who sues? People at,
individual athletes will sue.
Okay. So that's what would have to happen. There's no...
Yeah, that's what's happened all along. That's why we keep having all these, you know, like the transfer rules and, you know, the sit-out rules on transfers and all those keep falling by the wayside. It's because the athletes sue.
What did you... I assume you were listening. What'd you make of Lou's argument, or not argument, so thoughts regarding the NFL union versus the baseball union and those kinds of things? I thought it was really interesting, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, and it was kind of interesting to say that, you know, that if it was going to be a cooperative effort between the NFL and the Players Association, then the NFL owners want to make sure that it's memorialized in the collective bargaining agreement. I think that makes a lot of sense, even if. And it doesn't mean that the players are doing all the contributions to the to whatever funding that they, or funding, pensions, whatever it is they're giving to the retired players. The NFL can still fund it. The NFL ownership group can still fund it, but it's going to wash through there for administrative purposes. And I think that makes a lot of sense because. Otherwise, you have the risk of it being arbitrary.
Well, I think in terms of it, how can I say this without... In Lou's world, it makes a lot of sense. In my world, it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, in terms of...
Explain, please.
Well, if all these guys are playing in the NFL up to, pick a date, 1970, and all of a sudden there's a union... And there's a collective bargaining agreement. Now, set aside the part that people are negotiating with a monopoly, in my opinion, an illegal monopoly, and whether it's an arm's length deal or not, set all that aside. So all of a sudden the owners, let's say, abused people in 55, 57, 62. As to why the owners, to me there's an obligation there. And to run it by the players in some half-assed way of saying, how would you like me to take some of your money and take care of these guys in the 50s, knowing the people they're talking to, they're going to say, screw that, I don't care about those people. I don't get that connection at all. I mean, it's probably just my economic mind versus Lou's legal mind, but I don't get that connection at all. One has nothing to do with the other. It to me, the idea of the players negotiating a rookie salary cap when the rookies aren't at the table, to me, is an abomination. But again, I'm not a legal person. Like, how
again, closed shop unions do that all the time.
I know they do, but I'm saying I'm not represented at that point, am I?
No.
Well, what am I saying? Why would somebody from the 50s who needs three knee surgeries and had a pension, like Herb Adderley had a cash in his pension to pay for his knee surgery? Why is that have to be approved by somebody paying today? That happened long before there was a union, long before you even board. Shut the bleep up, in my opinion. But that's just me.
Well, I think they're looking for, because pensions in general are negotiated through the collective bargaining agreement, I think any kinds of payouts that follow along those lines, whether it's for liability or whatever. Otherwise, you go to workman's comp for that kind of stuff. And that's, you know, that's a totally different construct, and that is outside of the union. If you recall, Dick Butkus was the one who broke that barrier with the lawsuit.
But what did it get him? How much?
Whatever comp paid. I don't know. I don't remember how much now. You did that back in the 1970s.
The whole thing. These were injuries that happened. We don't do that now with other stuff. I mean, if you were working for some company and there was asbestos there in the place, if you manage to survive long enough to make it through the courts, they don't get to say, well, that was before we knew asbestos was bad, right? I mean, we seem to have some people that, you know, depends on who you are, whether the rules apply to you. I mean, clearly, those guys were, even though the owners didn't know, but the fact that somebody has to kick in his pension to pay for knee surgery, we all knew where it happened. But it's happening today, though, Kevin. I mean, the person that I know of, you know, University of Pennsylvania said, oh, no, it's high school. And high school said, what do you mean, it's University of Pennsylvania? I mean, it's everybody's doing a two-step on this CTE stuff. I mean, it just seems kind of weird to me that the courts seem to work for some people and not for others. Is that, or is it just me thinking that?
Oh, that, yeah, that's been true for a long time too. Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
I mean, the NFL managed to wait those old guys out, and then they died. And Roger Goodell, I still remember him saying how sorry he was that Johnny Unitas died. It was the best day in his life. Johnny Unitas was the head of that group. It was a big thorn out of his ass when Johnny Unitas died. You know, when you have that much money, how can you possibly spend half your day trying to say these 20 people don't deserve a bone? Well, because it got down to what, like 20 people that had the problems. And I understand where Upshaw is coming from. When Lou made it sound like Upshaw said it really wasn't his union problem today. The people who were there before the union, and I understand exactly where he's coming from, but that doesn't absolve the owners, does it?
No, of course not.
I think they got away with it, didn't they?
Well, yeah, they have, but it doesn't absolve the Players Association either as to, you know, where should their representation go? Because when you talk about the players before the 1970s, that's one thing, but most of those are not around anymore anyway.
Well, thank God for the NFL, right?
We're also talking about people that retired a few years ago. And that's where the Players Association comes in, because they did represent those people.
Well, no argument there. Did you, who do you think, I didn't go through all the, I was going through this business stuff last night. Did you happen to look at all the, I didn't see any huge blockbuster trades on the deadline, did you? Or maybe I just missed them?
There were some big ones. Yeah, there were some big ones. But the Cubs did not do a blockbuster. They did some improvements. They had a couple of nice improvements, I think.
They grabbed a couple of relief pitchers, right?
Yeah, I think Soroka can be a starter, at least in the interim, until they get their starters back. Do keep in mind that not too long after the trade deadline, they're going to get Assad and Tyone back, so that will help their that will do a lot for their starting pitching. So, you know, so the question for the Cubs always is, how much are you willing to give up for a starter, knowing you're going to get a couple of your guys back? And so I think that part's important to keep in mind. Also, I was kind of looking over the Cubs' existing roster and when contracts are expiring, and it's kind of interesting to see, because first of all, they weren't going to let Casey go because they don't know whether they're going to sign Tucker. So if they don't sign Tucker, then their number one prospect, Owen Casey, is going to slide into right field, they hope, next year. You get all kinds of guys who are hot prospects that don't make it, but you get guys that do as well. So that he's their insurance policy against Tucker, but he could also wind up being in another outfield position For instance, I'd have to look up Ian Happ, but I don't know when his contract is up. But you know, he could wind up being a replacement there. Suzuki is only signed through next year, so Moises Ballesteros might be the next designated hitter after Suzuki. So you start looking at some of what they have going, and they do have to have a certain amount of succession planning. That if they were to go gut their prospects list now, especially for guys that were going to be 2 month rentals, I could see why they wouldn't want to pull the trigger on a blockbuster.
Tell me where I'm wrong with my attitude regarding
a guy that they could control for the next two or three years, but those are really expensive.
Tell me where I'm wrong on this, and I suspect you'll disagree, but if I have a guy like Tucker, and I offer him an extension that makes like a real lot of sense and is like a real lot of dough, and covers him this year in case of injury and all that other kind of stuff, and his agent tells me to pound sand, you know what, Kevin, I'm not even going to make a bid in a free agent market. Why? Where's my advantage?
Well, so the question is, assuming that they've approached him, and I suspect that they have, did he tell him to pound sand? Did they have cordial discussions? Did he ultimately just come to the conclusion that I want to see what the market is, but I'm going to give you a fair shot? There's a lot of ways that conversation could have gone. So I don't know what the answer is. Yeah, I do think it would be a good idea to extend somebody, but you know, no player wants to leave money on the table if he can help it.
Okay.
I get why they want to become free agents, because he's probably not going to get a second bite at that apple.
Well, and I sure as hell don't wish this on anybody, but if all of a sudden we see an abductor pull on him, every offer's off the table. See ya.
Well, an abductor pull would be one thing. A serious knee injury or something like that would be quite different.
Well, how long it's taking these guys 4 months to come back from abductor pulls? How long has the catcher been out?
Well, that's true. That's another guy that will be getting back soon, by the way.
Yeah.
Because he's doing rehab assignments, so they will be adding another bat, too.
But, I mean, the idea, even if it's an injury you should be able to come back with, nobody wants to go through arbitration injured. Not arbitration, through...
Nobody wants to go through arbitration injured. Nobody wants to...
Free agent for injured.
It's not the first abductor pull that's going to get you. What if it's your second? You know, now people worry that you're prone to that injury because it is a long rehab.
Once in a while I have an adult beverage with some people who played sports until they were like 65. Football, baseball. They never even heard of an abductor pull. What is it, Kevin? Something in your ribcage? They go, I've never heard of anybody in all the years I've played, they have an abductor pull. Is that because...
Well, I think you get some guys that overdo the weight room, or they don't do the weight room properly. And so that, you know, they lose the flexibility that they need.
Dr. J used to tell me, John Nigerian used to say that you see a lot of people when they were really big on bench strength, you know, mm-hmm. doing bench exercises and didn't balance it off, we're very susceptible that if a running back came by them and they stuck out their arm to like grab them, that they would pull a chest muscle or tear a chest muscle. Where if you were more balanced and limber, that rarely happened.
And I think most people who lead strength and conditioning programs are pretty good about that, but you also can't stop the players from overdoing it.
Oh yeah. Plus it becomes a manly thing, and you can prove how many roids you had the last week by how quick your bench goes up. Evidently, if you start pounding the roids, this is what John used to tell me because he was on all these different teams, and he said if you get a guy who's really struggling to do like 240 on the bench, say he's just a more slender kind of guy, and he starts popping roids, you know, he's doing 280 in the week. They hit you. They work real fast, evidently. Just so you know, as you're trying to get up your push-up stuff.
Maybe I never had the experience, so.
Well, you know, if you're trying to get to 50 on those push-ups, maybe the roids might help. Just saying. You don't even have to inject yourself. Sammy Sosa said he never did. Just pop a few. Dannebaugh. Little Dannebaugh and one of the other ones. They probably got better ones now. Anyway, just before we got a minute before break, we got the employment number coming out today. What are you seeing employment situation wise in your area? Is it everything okay or?
Experience, yeah, it's pretty much status quo.
What do you think the numbers are going to show?
I don't know. What are they predicting, like 110?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I think the top line number will probably come in a little higher than that, but I'll wait until Carl has 5 minutes to dig into it and to a little bit later, and we'll have a better view of it.
I'm real worried about much as worried as one person can be about the participation rate ducking in the 58s. That's not good, Kevin. I mean, I don't know how much lower that can get before we have even more problems than we have.
I think that's the biggest problem. Although it will be interesting to see what happens, because as we have had more people leave the country, that is creating more jobs. But the question is, are the businesses bidding for the jobs at a market rate compared to submarket rates that they have been paying for people who have been in the country illegally?
We can go back and forth on that, because I don't see people paying submarket rates here. I mean, there's anybody who's willing to work for any kind of a job is getting paid. I mean, I don't know, Kevin, if there is a labor shortage.
It's when you're paying people cash off the books that you're paying submarket rates.
That I haven't seen people do here in ages, except the people coming out of Home Depot. But anyway, S&P futures up 63, down 63. So used to saying up. NASDAQ futures down 258. Different world in the NASDAQ than we were yesterday morning. We'll see. Maybe we can bounce back the other way today, but as of now, not so much. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. Ricky on the board. SP futures down 62. NASDAQ futures down 255. Dow futures down 416. Individual stocks, we've got Apple is up 374. They had earnings. Microsoft had earnings yesterday, and they were up yesterday, and they're up again today. Amazon, not so much. Amazon had earnings yesterday, down 18. That's almost 8%. That's the only one of the big ones of these earnings plays that have crashed. I mean, Meta was up like $80. It's down 70 this morning. Sorry, not 77 this morning. A little bit of a give back, but not much. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei down 270.7%. Hang Seng now 265, that's 1.1%. Shanghai down 13.4%. Over in Europe, we got a big down move here. We got the DAX down 445, that's 1.9. We've got the FTSE down 51.6, not so bad there. CAC around down 167, that's 2.1. So with the stocks, Europe 600 down, is down 1.3%, so that's kind of a combined one. Bonds up 3 base points, 4.39. The Bund up 4. 2.73, Japan unchanged at 1.56. Oil down 67 cents, 68.59, and almost made it to 70. Now it's come back down. Brent down 67 cents, 71.07. Gold still lower, 33.51. It's up 290, but it's a weekly loss. Silver down 15 cents, copper up 5 cents, 440. I am still so stunned of that copper move the other evening, down $1.10. That's an incredible move. It's $32,000 on a one lot, and I tell you what, if somebody front run that order, I guess they're never going to be put in jail these days. But boy, I'd sure like them in jail. The dollar 114 against the euro, so it's down from 117 a few weeks ago. British pound 131. It was at 135. So there's been a major move up in the dollar and down in the pound and in the British pound. Don't know if that's good or bad or whatever. Went up and then it came right back, or they went up and they came right back down. And we have crypto down 1,800, 115, 101. It's lower than that's been in a while. Reinforced traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:34 a.m. here in Chicago. 68 degrees right now with a high of 75. Pretty nice weather, but hazy sun and very unhealthy air quality due to smoke from wildfires. So now we'll be clear with a low of 65 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 93 degrees right now with a high of 113. Mostly sunny and hot. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for too long. So now we'll be clear with a low of 86 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at about 15 minutes. Kennedy from Montrose. Mount Edens from Lane Cook, 29 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 20 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 14 minutes. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from turning 4 to the Dan Ryan, 19 minutes. NFL, the Hall of Fame game we had yesterday. Chargers beat Lions 34-7, which was, pretty sad, but it's good to have some football back. MLB, today we got Orioles at Cubs, 1:20 p.m. White Sox at Angels, 8:38 p.m. And Diamondbacks at Athletics, 9:05 p.m. Back to you, Chief.
Kevin, in regards to the...
Well, before you do that, with the Orioles coming to town, one of the guys that the Cubs acquired was on the Orioles. Do you suppose the Orioles let him fly with the team, or was they cut him loose and he's on his own to get here?
I would hope they let him fly with the team. What about the guy who changed teams in the middle of the doubleheader the other day?
Yeah.
Did he leave? Did he have to go back in street clothes and walk around the other clubhouse, or how did that work out?
Yeah, did they have a uniform for him ready?
Well, I think you'd want to pack your bag and get it the hell out of that clubhouse, don't you think, or not? Who knows?
Yeah, you probably don't want to be there when the game's over and everybody comes in.
Didn't he finish the game? Wasn't he playing?
I think once they tried you, you may be playing, but they usually pull you off the field.
Yeah, well, I guess my question is, without asking it, is did the trade happen after the game, or did it happen like in the sixth inning? I don't know that. I'm not expecting you to either. Then you would pull him. Then I suppose you would, since he's the only guy in the clubhouse, I'm sure other people pack your stuff at that level, and you wander around and get the other guy's uniform. But evidently, when he left...
It depends. Is the guy happy about the deal, or is he unhappy about the deal?
Well, evidently, when he left,
not a contender to a contender, then you're probably happy.
Well, when he walked out of the dugout, I think they might have brought him in a uniform when he walked out of the dugout in the other guy's uniform, because his teammates were giving him no end of crap, supposedly. Here, bring him the Cub uniform, pack his bags, and bring his stuff over here. You can't write fiction like this. you just can't. I don't, crazy, crazy stuff. Hey, I didn't ask you, just your kind of your opinions on not so much the Epstein administration stuff. I mean, that's been covered all over the damn place. But what do you think of the stuff the dudes were saying yesterday and what this young lady wrote in these books? And evidently, she did live in South America for a while. She was doing this research. What do you make of the fact that the same creatures seem to be involved all the way back to Iran-Contra, the same banks, the same sort of underworld kind of crap? It goes back like 50 years. I mean, does that boggle your mind as much as mine? Same people. I mean, they never shut down those banks. They never got to those people. And if anybody does something bad today, they use the same places. I mean, I don't know what to make of that, but what do you make of it?
Well, you got to have your infrastructure in place if you're going to do nefarious things. I mean, look at all the stuff that's, that between Gabbard and then the stuff from the Durham investigation that was released. That was they found that in a burn bag. A burn bag is where you put things that are going to be destroyed. And they keep finding all this information. We've been running these ops for years. None of it goes away.
Okay, how could you make it go away? I always go back to the exam, and I don't know, we probably read the damn book, but they just came up with the second movie, The Day of the Jackal. It's all about people want retribution for de Gaulle because he disbanded the French Foreign Legion. And the people must have been making money over there, had a nice life, stealing, whatever the hell they were doing. And all of a sudden, they didn't want him to do it. Sort of the, I guess it's close to Kennedy wanting to not entrusting the CIA, maybe because he thought they were going to kill him, and maybe he did. They did. I mean, how do you if you actually wanted to.
Yeah, just don't disrupt people's ability to make a living, no matter how nefariously they're doing it.
Yeah, well, it's, thing of it is, it never, you know, one of the things that she brought out was how some of the original deals with the underworld was during World War II. And yet the two people that ran the OSS was Bill, how was his name? Bill Donovan, Big Bill, Wild Bill. And then Little Bill Stevenson ran the MI6. And both of those people were incredibly above reproach. I mean, unlike anybody on either side of the aisle today, I mean, they were, never was a word spoken that they weren't, you know, they weren't the pharaohs. They were absolutely dedicated to what they were doing. But the seems like the connections keep staying there, Kevin, and maybe the next person isn't quite as concerned about the nefarious stuff, and the next person maybe a little less, and maybe the next person actually loves it. I mean, it seems like this stuff always grows the wrong way, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but you know, you can take a look at the FBI for as an example, and it's actually one of the good things that I think has happened this year, and that is, in the FBI, if you wanted to get promoted, you had to be in D.C. So all of the agent concentration was in Washington D.C. And when Kash Patel came in, he said, "Nope, we're breaking that up. We're sending everybody out to field offices." And we're going to put people where the crimes are, where the investigations are, etc., and not have this concentration in D.C. Because when they talk about swamp, or about doing something about the swamp, part of it is to get to break up the cartel, so to speak, and to decentralize it. You know, and I would love to see that with much more government. Where should you really have the headquarters for the Department of Agriculture? Should that be in D.C. or should that be in Kansas or someplace like that? And you start looking at that, and if you're going to, because when you have this gigantic concentration of bureaucracy in Washington D.C., nothing's going to go away, and there's just new, there's always new scams for where you hide the money. I don't know how much of this you've been reading about NGOs, what you've been reading about how, documents get hidden and then they just keep getting moved. It's a moving target. This is all going on. So,
there's not to replace the other NGOs with their own? That's all they've ever done in every administration.
That's exactly what happens, is whoever's got their favorite NGOs. But even among the favored, the minute a light gets shined on some of them, then all of a sudden we have new ones. There's people putting up NGOs just for the purpose of getting money. So, some kind of legislation gets passed and all of a sudden, these aren't even existing NGOs that get funded. Somebody says, I'm going to create a new one just so I can get funding.
But Kevin, on an economic argument, you've kind of wandered in right where Milton Friedman used to talk all the time. The reason why he talked about all this stuff all the time is because I took him for a class, The Theory of Price. And most of the people in the class weren't all that interested in it, and kind of neither was he. So it was sort of, because it was a disgusting class, Kevin. It was all math. Nobody wanted any part of it, and neither did he. But so it was easy to get him off topic. Now, how do you get from, he would use the example of, say, like maintaining the toll road. You could, if you wanted to, hire all kinds of public employees, and I'm not saying they're bad or they're inefficient or anything like that. You could go down that road and say, okay, we're going to do, this is going to be, everybody's doing maintenance for the toll road and plowing and all that kind of crap. It's all going to be employees of the state or of the tri-state authority, wherever you want to do it. Or, and he was always in favor of, let's have, put the job down. This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to bring 15 toll booth operators or 1,500, whatever the hell it is, and spec out the job and have various people from private enterprise essentially bid on the job. And that's how you would get more efficient. And in theory, economic theory, you can't argue with the dead Uncle Milty. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It keeps things in private enterprise. Then all of a sudden you get to the point where, wait a minute, it's not really a good bid. Everybody doesn't get a chance to get involved. Favored people get the bid written, so there's stuff in there that only a couple firms can do it. And all of a sudden, now you get to this, we're going to go outside for this, and then people...
Not to mention all the anti-competitive stuff that they can do on a collusive basis.
Right, right. So I'm saying now you get to the point where, in Milton Friedman's world, you've now totally bastardized the idea to maybe you're better off hiring the people yourself. But nobody likes to do that, especially if the job is somewhat temporary. I mean, you don't want to hire... Let's say you did build a wall down on the southern border. You don't want 40,000 construction workers employed by the government, because as soon as the wall, say the wall is going to take 2 years, and probably, let's just say 2 years, you don't want to then fire 40,000 people. That's when you go to private. But now, how many construction companies are there in Chicago? Is Walsh now an NGO? Probably. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're so in tight with the bidding. But then again,
they wouldn't. I wouldn't classify them an NGO.
But I'm saying,
it's the same theory. It's the, so I get what you're saying. And then just for fun, we do set asides. We say there has to be a certain amount of this business goes to minority owned companies. So somebody stands up a minority owned company. Who immediately subcontracts the work to Walsh.
Well, yeah.
After taking a cut of it. So, you know, that you know, we are all about scams. And, it never goes away.
Well, the one I read, Kevin, I think we were doing the show. When was Katrina? Was that more than 15 years ago?
It was younger George Bush, so it would have been 90s.
All right, so... So as long as before I was doing the show, I think, with John. But anyway, there was an article I wrote about all the federal money going to Katrina. And you know, one of the things I would look at, and I guess since you're a pretty much an efficiency expert, one of the things you would look for is if somebody got a contract and they subcontracted it out, I think for the once in our lives you wouldn't argue with me, I would immediately pull it. I just pull it in a second. Evidently, some of the cleanup contracts went to... I remember in the article, like I was reading it yesterday, something about big firms in Washington were getting the contract. They were subcontracted. The thing got subcontracted down like three or four times. So if you actually went to look at the project, like cleaning up the neighborhood, you had like some guy with three dump trucks, maybe a backhoe, and five, maybe not even citizen dudes, sweeping the street. And they were like the fifth person who got it. It was subcontracted like four and five times.
Well, and at each stop, somebody had to peel off a layer of the funding.
Yeah. But that's how ridiculous the amount of money was that was apportioned for the job. I think one of the ways, and I would say that I always use this example, and probably people get sick of it. Say, you know, if we made PT boat engines in World War II, I don't think either one of us are naive enough to know that there might not have been 5%, 7% padding in there. Padding is a term. But then again, it's given to the workers. It's paid for in the local bars. People pay taxes back to the government on it. So, you know, there's some give back. But if I found out that you and I got the PT boat contract and we immediately... kicked it to Ricky for half price, I got a problem with that, don't you?
Yeah, because Ricky should have been able to bid on it and get it for half price in the first place.
Right. And another question is, what prevented him? And I know one of Audrey's cousins, who I don't know if she talks to anymore, but he would do all these electrical bids. He was a big electrical contractor, and he'd say, who are you competing against, these big firms? He goes, no, not really. Because you don't have to. If you're putting in some huge transformer somewhere, he goes, the person who sells the transformer, the brand of the transformer, might already be in the bid along with like 30 other parts. So whatever the bid is, they're already included. So all you're really bidding on is the, you know, whether you think it's going to be 1,000 labor hours or 1,100, how much you're going to pay your people, but you got to pay a union. So it's all about just the labor piece. But the person who actually gets to sell the units They don't care if they win the bid. They sort of already have. You know, you hear this kind of stuff, Kevin. I'm sitting there, boy, I never thought of that. It's how is it every day, if you keep your eyes open, every day you live, when you go to bed at night, you realize how much you didn't know the day before and how much you still don't know, right? Otherwise, if you think you know everything, well, that's a different brand of character. But if you don't, if you just keep your eyes open, you realize every day there's less you know, not more, even though you learn every day. Is that fair, or is that just me being goofy?
Yeah, the number of scams available is limitless.
You know, how come I have such a huge imagination when it comes to economics? And really in trading and in option spreads and things like that, how come I can't think of any of these scams up?
I don't know, Tom. Gotta work on it.
I know. You guys should have a class in scams.
Come up with some.
Why don't you get Rodney Dangerfield, pull him out of the grave and teach a little scam class.
I do. It's called business law when I teach it.
God. All right, so what's your early picks on the... I do have to ask on the... Do you think the Epstein thing's going to drop down or going to keep going?
We'll find a new outrage soon enough.
Yeah, that's true.
We have a short attention span in this country.
Yeah, seemingly getting shorter. Why do you think the tariff stuff all blew up yesterday so much? Why? I mean, August 1st is supposed to be the date where everything settled down. You're either in or you're out, and all of a sudden it flew up again last night. I mean, like it threw gas on the fire again. Is it?
Well, what do you mean? Explain that what you're saying a little bit.
Well, last night, for whatever, the sweeping new tariffs came in yesterday. And yesterday was supposed to, or today was supposed to be the signed an executive order which adjusted so-called reciprocal tariffs in a slew of countries with new levies ranging from 10% to 40%. It evidently, you know, it was supposed to be the deadline, and they were making progress and make a deal with that person. And virtually everybody I listened to on CNBC said that by Friday we're going to end up with 15% across the board, and all this stuff is going to settle down, and everybody's going to deal with it, and everything's going to be okay. I mean, if you're on CNBC and you're not bashing the administration, that's what everybody was saying. And as of last night, that pretty much exactly what didn't happen. And I'm just kind of surprised.
What's your read of what happened then?
Well, I mean, there was a guy from the news of Switzerland facing 39% tariffs is disappointing. Rahul Sagal, CEO of Switzerland. American Chamber of Commerce told CNBC's Squawk Box Sheriff on Friday. Switzerland has invested a lot of time and gone through many rounds of negotiations. Very U.S. bodies and officials, he said, suggesting an agreement had not been far off. Then we get slapped with 39% at this point. It's very disappointing. Now, when I check, Kevin, Switzerland doesn't have any tariffs. So why are we... What's with the 39%? What are we trying to prove here? Maybe there's more to it.
Depends. What do they have? Because, you know, the European Union, for instance...
They're not part of the European Union.
Was about VAT, you know, and where VAT fit into the equation.
Well, we have sales tax. Where does that fit in?
Yeah, well, yeah, they all do. But we don't have a national sales tax.
What's the difference?
Well, there isn't in terms of execution of it, but in terms of national policy, there is.
Okay. I don't get the difference. It's the same number. But I guess I didn't think that they were... When somebody has no tariffs and you put a tariff on them, it's reciprocal. Why is it reciprocal? I mean, the idea that these guys have actually gone through every one of these places and done this stuff, I find it ridiculous, but whatever.
Tom, it's gonna it might churn for a couple of days, but it's going to settle down just like it did before. And then we'll find out what the real effect is.
Well, we know what the effect's going to be. The question is how much, right?
Do we know what the effect's going to be? Because some of the stuff, even though they hit their date and got their tariffs, but some of the stuff is still being negotiated. It's not like they got to today and said, okay, all negotiations stop.
Right, but I'm saying at the end of the day we're going to have this massive tax, and the question is how massive. And I don't.
Well, the question also is who's paying it.
We are.
Who's we?
The tax goes from the border to the government on this end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you're paying it.
The question always is, how is it going to show up in the price of goods?
The price of goods are going to go up. Question is maybe, how much?
Maybe.
Why do you say maybe? Why? How could they not?
Because that's not how pricing works.
I know exactly how pricing works. It may not in one particular good, but across the board, if the government's going to get $660 billion from someplace, it's going to come out as the prices are going to be up. How could they not be?
It may come out of the importing company's side. It may come out of the exporting company's side, a combination of those. It may come out of the consumer side. It all depends on what consumers are willing to pay for goods, because what consumers are willing to pay is not the same thing as what people don't do cost plus. They may say my costs have increased, therefore I have to increase my prices, but that only goes so far, and it doesn't. And right now we're at very high price levels where people are already balky about making purchases. You're not going to pile on top of that, or else you're going to be out of business. People don't cost plus price. The market's going to determine what price is going to be paid. The companies that are going to succeed in this environment are the ones that are already running very lean, and they don't have a lot of waste in their process, so they have some wiggle room to absorb some of the costs.
Nobody's 40% lean than somebody else. It's surprising to me how
actually there are people who are 40% leaner than
okay,
others.
but it's rare. I mean, the idea that somehow at the end of the day that some people who are so taken by this administration, and somewhere along the end of the day that this somehow this is all going to come out. What if it comes out of the hides of the people here? Is that good?
The hides of who are the people here?
So somebody imports wine, pays the tax, and has to sell the wine for break even, and he goes out of business. Is that a good thing?
It's not a good thing, and I'm not advocating for that. But what I am saying is, it will force the people to look at what they do and to see if they can do it better and cleaner. Because if they don't, they will be out of business. And it is forcing a lot of hands right now. And I'm getting those conversations.
So it is a massive tax, and it may end up creating a little bit of efficiency here and there. But it's a massive tax that didn't go through Congress, and most people here are too dumb to realize it is a tax. They think the tax is on China. Well, China's a special case.
I think that educational process has been pretty loud and clear over the last few months. I think there's a lot more people that understand how it works. Carl just put a comment in the chat, but Carl, you should jump in and go ahead and make your point, and we can follow up on that too.
All right, well, here's the point, which is that, you guys have obviously been watching the earnings reports. I've been watching the earnings reports. With everything being AI these days, I mean, go on any social media, and the first five things that get surfaced on your feed are obvious BS generated by a computer. They're not somebody telling you a story about their cute cat, okay? I mean, excuse me, when you have a dog doing a diving competition, that was not actually a dog.
Okay.
I mean,
it's bad because it would be really cool if it were a dog.
Yeah, but I mean, we're not that stupid, right? Nobody believes that. So, okay. And yet Meta puts up a number that is, I mean, well, you saw what their stock price reaction was, right?
It was like $80.
Yeah, I mean, that was, okay.
By the way, Carl, did you hear earlier that the four stocks yesterday were up a total of $650 billion in market cap?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that when it first came out, and of course, I saw the spike, that it drove in the Qs, the Q futures, and also in the S&P futures, because of course, it's all part of the same, in the indices. Okay, fine. So go ahead and tell me that there's not a huge amount of slop in this, because what this says to me when I look at all of this is that Meta has essentially stolen the entirety of the online advertising market, because that's how they make money, right? I mean, that's their product. They sell your eyeballs.
Carol, how much do they actually make? I mean, it's like,
well, Chief, it does. It, look, all that matters is that the market says that when you get down to it, it doesn't make any difference. All that matters is the market says that they can go out and they can sell stock out of the treasury into the marketplace at $775 a share, and somebody will buy it.
Right.
All right. Now, the thing is that whether or not you believe that's a reasonable valuation or not, you and I would say that's lunacy, okay? That, you know, I mean, anybody trying to tell me that 10 times sales is a reasonable price is nuts.
How about 15?
All right, but you get where I'm going, right?
Yeah.
All right, I mean, somebody trying to say that the price is at that price, that's insane. The fact of the matter is, somebody pays it. Otherwise, it wouldn't trade there. All right, whether I think it's crazy or not is irrelevant. What's relevant is that somebody hits that bid. Okay, they lift it. Okay, well, if you're telling me that there's no slop in the system and yet we have markets trading at these numbers, I'm going to say you're wrong.
Two totally different subjects.
Not really.
Sure they are.
I mean, no, not really. You know what? The other thing, I don't know if you guys just saw this. This may be where a large part of the dump overnight in the futures came from. I don't think it's so much the tariff announcements. I think the largest impact came from what Trump circulated last evening related to pharmaceuticals. Okay, and by the way, there's an article that's out this morning that basically says, well, he doesn't have any way to do that. Basically, that America has to pay most favored nation pricing on all drugs. Okay, and they're saying, oh, but there's actually no way for him to do that. Actually, there is a way for him to do that. 15 United States Code Chapter 1 says that this kind of price discrimination is a criminal felony, and he does have a way to do it because the executive is in charge of the Department of Justice, and he can say, you either do it or your ass is going to sit in jail for 10 years.
Everybody's failed on this. Everybody going back to Bush has failed on this. Why do you think he's
I understand that, but I'm saying the law is there. He does not need Congress. Everyone's running around this morning making excuses that there's no, that Congress has to act to do this, that there's no law. That's BS.
All they do is raise everybody else's price. What makes you think they lower ours?
By the way, one of the points that I made back when I wrote Leverage was that if you leveled this, simply because we're 330 million people, you know, it's up a little bit. It was 300 when I wrote that. Now it's 330. We're 330 million people, roughly, more or less, right? And there's 8 billion people on this planet. I can do math, and I can do a multivariate, if the total amount of dollars spent is going to remain the same, maybe it will, maybe it won't, I can do a simple ratio calculation as to how much our prices go down and how much their prices go up. And ours collapse by 80%.
All right. I hope that he does do that, by the way, that somehow or another these prices do go down. I don't think he has any... Well, whatever. I'll leave it at that. I hope it does work this time. I don't see any of the... all the crap that's being done with these universities... It's all about him trying to be in charge of the whole goddamn world. But if you're going to talk about stuff going to universities and research money, I would have had you two guys in the same room with a bunch of other people, and I'm going to say, okay, this all sort of ties together. How is it we're putting out all these research grants to the universities? Universities are charging us one hell of an overhead on the research they're doing, so they're making out like a bandit.
Right.
And oh, by the way, if they actually do come up with a drug, they don't get it, or we don't get it, somebody else gets it. With a patent for 17 years to rip the hell out of everybody for the next 17 years. I would try and fix the whole thing, not just blow off steam and say you're going to do this and that and accomplish nothing. This all ties together. You need to tie it together.
Chief, you're not going to get an argument from me on that, okay? What you're going to get an argument from me on is that you have 535 Crittens who sit in Washington, D.C. You have K Street, which has bought this. You have people like Epstein who turned it into blackmail, all right, which is fairly obvious. We can't manage to trace where the money came from and expose it. By the way, I've never seen
we can if we wanted to.
Well, I'm just saying, exactly. I've never seen a bank that will let you lie about the bank statement. All right, when I was going through negotiating selling my company, I had one of the suitors that was coming in and looking at our stuff. They didn't believe the financials we gave them. I actually had a phone call from one of their people in their finance office that was like, well, this can't possibly be right. You can't possibly have a 42% pre-tax operating margin. And I said, well, that's what the numbers say, right? He said, well, yeah, but that's impossible.
Listen, Microsoft's had that for years.
I said, no, he says, nobody has a 42% pre-tax operating margin. I said, okay, listen, all this stuff ties back to the cash statement. I said, the cash statement obviously ties back to the bank statement. I said, you guys have signed non-disclosure paperwork. You have the authorization to look under the kimono. Call up American National Bank, get Saul on the phone, and ask him whether or not these ending balance statements are correct.
You're not looking at this right. If you and I and Kevin all of a sudden decided to become three nefarious creatures, and I don't know, I don't think we could say we did. We took the wrong pill or something. All we got to do is read the book like this lady Webb wrote, or look at Iran-Contra and look at it, and we'd say, here's the banks we have to use to get away with. They're still there.
Well, I get that, okay, but guess what? Mine wasn't J.P. Morgan or Goldman or whatever, right?
Well, you got to start with their foreign group that's tied together. What was the one? Wayne was talking about. Who's the BCIC? Who the hell were those guys?
Yeah.
British Bank of Commerce or something?
Yeah, BCCI.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there aren't, if you actually set out to screw somebody at the start when you set something up that you can't structure things in a way that you can get away with something like that.
Yeah, it's real hard to come into an honest guy who hasn't even thought of that. You can pummel them like they do on an audit here all day long.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing. When you've got somebody that set up a company with the intention of making money. That was why he did it in the first place, right? Trying to back your way into that 5 years later is kind of tough, right?
But if you don't have things set up with the Commerce Bank, you can't do it tomorrow or yesterday.
Right. I'm just saying, there's a little bit of a difference here when the guy starts literally with a computer and a rack of modems in the closet of his rented apartment. All right.
You have to have the right accountant. You got to have the right stuff. You can't just do this in a second.
Yeah, sure. There's ways to do this if you start with the larcenous intent to begin with.
Well, I mean, it's, I don't, but I just, I would love to see, at my age, a lot of my friends are on Eliquis, okay, for whatever reason. Right. They put everybody on there. Joe Biden, first year, Eliquis is one of my 10 drugs. We're going to lower the price. Never happened. I think it happened under Trump somewhere in his first term before the COVID overtook everybody, said something about drug prices. Never happened. So, I mean, I guess at this point, maybe I'm getting a little more cynical. What's the plan? How are you going to do it? By the way, if you wait another 10 months, it's off patent anyway, after 18 or 19 years. So it'll never happen.
Yeah, it's, but yeah.
What do you think people are paying for these chemo drugs?
Well, here's, Chief, this is one of the things, you just had this, quote unquote earthquake that went on in the FDA because Vinay, who Trump had brought in, he quit. Okay. Now he'd been attacked all the way across the line. From the time that he was appointed, this SOB is against drug innovation and da 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 da. No. What he had spoken about many times, and by the way, he's exactly correct, is that it is an act of fraud that screws people and just steals money to allow surrogate endpoints in drug trials. In other words, if I come up with a new cancer drug, and of course the point of a cancer drug is that if you use it, the cancer, either your life is extended or you go into remission, into some kind of durable remission, right? I mean, that's the point, yeah, right, of taking a cancer drug. Okay. So one of those two things is the endpoint for the study that I'm supposed to submit to the FDA that shows that this thing works in order to get it approved and therefore be able to sell it on the general market. Well, that's not what these guys have done. The entire field of Alzheimer's drugs was not based upon whether or not people lived longer or had actual cognitive improvements. It was based upon the premise that, well, we measured a smaller number of plaques in this dead person's brain when we dissected them, and therefore that means the drug works. No, it doesn't. Okay? Now, billions of dollars were extracted from people that we now know, after all this period of time, did absolutely nothing.
I'm gonna sort of change topics, but not really, Carl, because we dance from seemingly topic to topic, but they're all the same story. I mean, if you take something simple, and the reason why I guess I'm maybe more aware of this than most is I had two or three classes in grad school where this is all we did: design compensation packages, design packages for this. And every time somebody would design one, they'd pull somebody, there'd be 20 people in class, they'd pull it up there and they'd start putting down somebody's plan on the blackboard, back when you still had blackboards. And the entire rest of the class would basically laugh and poke holes at it and say, okay, right, what's somebody going to do? I mean, it came down to, if ever you try and design executive compensation packages, it is a fascinating subject. Fascinating subject. Even simple stuff like, let's pay people based on a bonus on a 3-month return. All of a sudden, somebody's hands go up. Wait a minute. You can't do that because the guy's going to pour all the pollutants in the stream. You're gonna have to pay to clean it up 5 years from now, and he's already got his bonus and he's gone.
He already got the money.
Yeah, right. He's gone. But you have stuff like Commonwealth Edison, 100 and some years. We've given public utilities stuff. Okay, and you say, all right, we're going to make sure they get a 6% return.
Right.
All right, now it doesn't take too long for even Kevin and his class to say, the first thing you do is pay yourself $1 million bonus, because guess what? The bonus goes into the costs, and then you get to raise the rates because you paid yourself a bonus.
I mean, well, not only that, yeah. But here's the other fun part. By the way, the maintenance on that plant is supposed to cost, because we've been doing it for 20 years, and we know what it costs to maintain the plant. The maintenance on that plant costs $50 million a year, okay, to do the ordinary stuff. Well, we'll only spend 40.
Yeah.
All right. Why? Because that way I can bonus out the other 10. Well, that creates a sinking fund debt that nobody gets called on that.
Then that's when you end up 30 years later saying we got somebody's transformers at 100 years old. Now we need a big bump so we can go replace them. Well, you were supposed to be replacing them the whole way.
That's right. You were supposed to be changing them out.
But it happens in the drug stuff. I mean, I guess I never really understood that until, what was her name? Katie was in. I said, well, who actually monitors all this stuff? Because they were working on some, orphan disease. Right. I said, who actually monitors? She says, well, there's money coming from individual people whose kids might have it. There's money coming from, the general donation. She was at Northwestern. She was at Vanderbilt. I think she's in Minnesota. They put a massive overhead on it to do research in their place, more than they probably need to. But it is their place, and some of their people are involved. And all of a sudden, someday, actually, you land on one, and guess what? Somebody ends up with a patent. Maybe the university gets a little piece of it. Probably not. The people who worked on it, like her, get nothing. The people put the money in to fund it get nothing. And all of a sudden,
even one of the bigger scams in the pharmaceutical area in particular is that you have an awful lot of federal funding that goes into the university complex in various forms that do a lot of this basic research. Okay. And then Pfizer or whoever comes in, ends up with the patented drug to sell.
Yeah, and I'd love to see how that actually works.
Guess what? They didn't actually discover the thing.
That's my point, yeah.
Right. They're not the ones who were the discovering entity. The discovering entity was the taxpayer.
Right. Well, any university, and people who volunteered, for that matter.
Well, but the point is that you, as a taxpayer, funded the research that led to the discovery.
Or you could have, it mostly affects black people, but you could have just been so pissed off that one of your kids' friends had sickle cell anemia that you gave $1 million. You get nothing.
Yeah, and you get nothing.
Yeah.
But this is the sort of thing that is, you know, is going on here. You know, we keep being told that there's a capacity crunch, you know, in all these different areas. Okay, the latest one that everyone's screaming about is that you have a couple of trucking companies that apparently have filed for bankruptcy. Okay, now this is, you know, this is the latest little diddy daddy. Okay, fine. If there's a problem with not having any drivers, it would seem to me that if you had these companies that filed bankruptcy, now all of a sudden there's a bunch of unemployed drivers, right?
Well, I mean, we could go with the agent. By the way, if Trump is supposed to be such a free market guy, or whatever he's supposed to be, why are we allowing Union Pacific to merge?
Oh my God! Yeah, well, you know what that's going to mean. That's going to be now that Buffett's little empire has to become a national.
No, they got to go with the CSX.
Well, that's right.
So we're down to two railroads. Does anybody think that two railroads is a good idea?
I think it's an absolutely terrible idea. But you know, this is look. You look at what else has happened in other areas. Okay,
but down to two's. Well, I guess the Canadian National is a bit player, right?
Yeah, they're a bit player, but they're not real, right?
Nobody really cares if you go from Chicago to New Orleans, I suppose.
Well, I mean, you do if you've got stuff to move from Chicago to New Orleans or the other way, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
they're not a major player. They're not in the gold business. They're not in the oil business that much.
Right, but you know, I mean, but the thing
not
is,
gold,
is
I mean, that coal. Sorry,
coal. Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing is that there's, you know, the argument that this is all about, well, you know, this means that we can just blow through the switchyard. We don't have to drop the train.
That's such BS. It's scary.
You and I know that. Anybody that's ever actually lived anywhere near a railroad knows that. Okay. I mean, how long does it take to actually do that?
They lease track it from other people all the time. They have for 150 years.
Yes. Right.
Well, Union Pacific used to have a train that came from into they came in by the Northwestern. They didn't have trackage past Omaha, did they?
I don't think so.
You know, all these people have trackage on other places. I mean, if you want to get somewhere, you borrow, you rent the track.
Chief, it doesn't change. The concentration is always the problem when you get down to it. You look at the situation in the healthcare environment, where it's very easy to see. It used to be, you know, when I was growing up, if I had to go to the doctor, my mom piled me in the back of the car. We went to the doctor. They had a split waiting room. There were two waiting rooms. One for people that were well, for kids that didn't have anything going on. You know, you're in for your annual physical, whatever, and the other one for kids that were sick. Okay, two separate rooms. Duh, because you don't want the sick kid to give the kid that isn't sick whatever it is that they have, right? All right, so you have two waiting rooms, but you went in there, you did your thing, mom goes up to the counter at the end of it and writes a check.
Right.
All right?
Now, so much more efficient, scary.
By the way, I only need one gal behind that desk to actually take that check. And at the end of the day, run the bag over to the bank, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
All right. I mean, and that's it. And that's the end of the payment flow. That's it. All right. That's all there is. Of course, as soon as you stick middlemen into the middle of this, everyone says, "Oh, we need to solve this insurance problem." Okay. Well, guess what? Insurance cannot solve a cost problem, ever. It actually makes it worse.
Without a doubt.
Because nobody works for free. And therefore,
how do I want to say this? I don't want to insult anybody. Oh, sometimes.
Oh, insult people all the time.
Sometimes when a truth hurts, it should. We're inundated here in Chicago now with, I'm sure everywhere, with the outfit that wants to insure your car repairs.
Yeah.
Does anybody think for a second, other than maybe, you know, getting some blanket thing that if you got a Mercedes and you need a new transmission out of warranty, it's $25,000, and you just can't afford it. Does anybody think for, I mean, but the commercials are so stupid, and they're not stupid, they're actually pretty good, but they're,
if you buy that, you're stupid.
If you listen to it, you feel like, how stupid do they think I am? The one right. One guy goes, the guy goes, his car, something broke down, and the lady goes, well, do you have something, something? I forget the name of the company. And no, because they take care of it. They right. even take care of oil changes. They take care of everything. Well, you're going to, somewhere collectively, everybody's paying them X, and they're going to add a lot of fees and salaries and stuff on top of that. Somewhere the collective bills being paid in is more than they're paying out, or else they're, I mean,
what, no, really?
Does anybody think for a second, you know, here's a, it's not like we have a really nice producer on the show named Ricky. Ricky has just bought, sorry, Ricky, if I'm talking about you. And he doesn't mind. He just bought a nice new car to him, but fairly late model, and he's got this warranty policy. Well, he's had some problems with the car, and every time he brings it in, it's like a week, and they fix what's wrong with it, and then give him a list of the other crap he should be doing, that's kind of like not on the warranty, and right. and like three times the price that anybody else would charge.
Right.
What a scam. He agrees with me. I think he'd be better off without a warranty. Basically, give him the car $500 cheaper. I
mean, well, you know, that's one of the things that has happened everywhere nationally is that now the latest thing is pet health.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, and the problem with all of this, Chief, and as I pointed out, is that in a column that I put up not very long ago, is that because at the end of this year, what Biden and his pals did trying to buy votes, which was changing the formulation for the Obamacare subsidies, okay, so there was a cap on the out-of-pocket payment you had to make as a percentage of your adjusted gross income, and irrespective of where the subsidy would otherwise phase out, that was the cap. Okay, so basically, just the tip. Okay, we're going to screw you because you're going to have worthless insurance that actually won't pay for anything until you fork up $8,000 a year because you got $7,500 deductible, right? But you'll just get the tip. All right, you won't get the whole shaft. You're just going to get the tip. Okay. That expires at the end of this year.
Well, Obamacare and all its weaknesses, someday, somewhere, are the Republicans going to come up with a plan? Or are they just going to continue to bitch about Obamacare?
Well, Chief, there is. Listen, what did I lead with on this? You cannot solve a cost problem with insurance. So there is no plan that you. So. The idea that you bag on the Republicans for not having a way to replace Obamacare, okay, is stupid. And right. You and everybody else need to stop doing it.
Right.
The way you solve this problem is you solve the cost issue.
I understand that.
So that 90% of the population can write a check.
Well, right? the solution now, from this administration is cut everybody off and let them die.
Well, all right, guess what? If the people in this country, instead of, well, you can't do that, say, you know what, up yours. If I am going to die, you are going to go meet St. Peter 30 seconds before I do.
Let's just say to the people and the drug companies, to get back to our original discussion, you're going to see the head of Pfizer or these other guys walk out and say, you know, we need all this money for research. We need this.
Of course.
I'm not into hurling bullets or anything, but if I had a really ripe tomato, I wouldn't mind winging it at him. I don't know if I can still hit him. My arm's not like I used to be. But but why do I have to listen to this BS from these people?
Because the administration, no matter, and you know what? I grant you that when Obamacare was originally put in, the system was in the process of collapsing. It was.
When the Obama thing
started. But here's the thing. But if Obama had cared about the actual people who had medical situations going on, he could have stood up and said, you know what? The laws on the books of this country that have been there for 80 years have said that what you are doing is a felony. And by the way, you have twice tried to argue all the way to the Supreme Court that there's an exemption in the law that applies to you that makes this not a crime. You lost both cases. So therefore, you're either going to cut this crap out or you're going to jail.
Well, okay. Bush could have done that.
Yep, Bush could have done it too. And you know what? Clinton could have done it. But none of them did do it. So here we are. And instead, now we have, and this is exactly the same sort of flood the zone crap that Obama did with DACA, okay? The way you prevent anybody from ever stopping a scam is you make it large enough that everybody screams if you ever do, because the doctor and the nurse are living in $500,000 houses that they couldn't afford otherwise.
Not anymore.
Well, you know what? There you are. And you know what? Oh, no. They get squeezed eventually? Oh, that's too bad. The drug company executive has a $10 million house.
The people who run the hospitals, somebody actually told me what the, first of all, I should have remembered it, but it was kind of loud. How much money Northwestern made last year?
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely stupid. Well, I mean, Chief, it's the same thing that happened.
They're laying off all the older doctors now because they can't control them.
Well, of course. But you know what? The guy who has $400,000 worth of debt, okay? And by the way, for those people who want to say, well, you know, what about those poor bastards? Well, guess what? They all did this voluntarily.
We're going to go to break early because of the numbers, but...
Yeah, numbers are coming.
Those things that I sent you, that outfit... I don't have it up here, but I'll get it up here. The outfit that has the... we need to talk about maybe later in the show, but... 2013 something something they call themselves. Evidently they have a site that I don't know how the hell I bumped into it. They seem to be to take every one of the lines of the CPI, and you can go back.
Yeah, and look at the
individual
line.
And it looks to me like they're pretty legit. If they are, it's pretty interesting. It's real interesting.
Yeah, it's not as far off as you. The problem is that the CPI is designed to understate things that nobody wants to deal with.
Right.
And it's deliberate. So, you know, I mean, and the CPI has had, you know, the really big changes were during Carter's administration, but there have been others that have been made over time. And then part of the problem that you have is the same thing you have with the BLS data, which is why I maintain my own tables. The Z1 became essentially worthless from a standpoint of tracking longer-term trends because the Federal Reserve went in and changed the historical records, which made it impossible for you to pull an extract out into Excel.
As a teaser, see, I'm good at that. As a teaser, these guys have a owner's equivalent rent, which is the one that you and I are sitting there going, what the hell does it mean?
I know exactly what it means.
I understand it, but what does it mean to regular people? They got it 100 hours in 2000 is 213 in 2025. And I'm going to say housing prices are up pushing three times. I've got insurance up like six times, and taxes are up three times. So we're to bleep. Let's go to break real quick so we'll be back when those numbers come out. S&P futures down 58, and NASDAQ futures down 242. We've actually come back a little bit, scary as that may seem. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains, think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities.
We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time at ptisecurities.com. Hello, North Bay Stocks Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures, before the number comes out, are down 60. Let's wait till let's see it comes out, and then we'll worry about what they are after. What do I got here? I have July.
Plus 73.
Wow, it was supposed to be what, 110?
I think we call that a miss in the
why don't we beg Traffic Weather Sports for getting all these numbers settled down?
Yeah, that sounds good, Chief. Good all morning. Right. It's 7:30 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 68 degrees right now with a high of 75. Perfect weather for hazy sun and unhealthy air quality today due to some smoke from wildfires, and it will be clear with a low of 65 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 93 degrees right now with a high of 113. Mostly sunny and hot. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for too long. Tonight will be clear with a low of 86 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Monroe's. We're looking at 20 minutes. Give me 1 second, Chief, while this charges. There we go. Emma Innes from Lane Cook, 37 minutes. We're looking at about 31 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf. Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson returning fourth to Dan Ryan, 27 minutes. The Hall of Fame game was yesterday. Chargers beat Lions 34-7. And today we got Orioles at Cubs, 1:20 p.m. White Sox at Angels, 8:38 p.m. And Diamondbacks at Athletics, 9:05 p.m. Back to you, Chief.
Go ahead. You give that number, and I'm looking at my dumb A1 here. Dumb A1 looks bad.
Smart A1, in other words... not and NSA is -4.
I got household numbers down 250,000.
Well, that's with the adjustments, I think. Let me look.
And people not knowing what they're doing, they're up.
With the adjustments, you're negative on the you're negative more with the seasonal adjustments, and the not in labor force number is down. About 100 on the not adjusted.
All right, this has got not in labor up 200, and they got actual unemployed up 100.
Yeah, you're up 200-ish on the 230, 240 on the seasonal adjusted. But the NSA number is down 102 on the. We don't know what they're doing now. That follows a down 927 last month. Okay, so that's a big number.
I'm looking at the combined unemployment. Don't know what they're doing. Is up like 300,000 people. That's a lot.
Well, so we lost the tick on the employment population ratio as well. We're
right.
At 59.8. The other thing, the nasty number that I have been I've been making a stink about this for a while. Because the negative trend goes all the way back to December of 2023, so it's now a year and a half. Okay, is the population adjusted employment number is ticked down 350,000 this month? It's now -3.380 million. That is not a small decline. This has been. As I've pointed out, Chief, since...
All right, explain that number to everybody. What is it?
Okay, so the mechanical calculation of this is the 12-month change in employment less the 12-month adjustment for the change in the working-age population. So if you were looking at Excel and you had the number employed in column B and the non-institutional population in column D, which is where they are on my sheet, it would be B 321 minus B 309 less the difference between D 321 minus D 309. So it's basically what this is the change in the number of people working, subtracting out before the change in the number of people who are in the non-institutional working population. And since we have a growing, whether people, you know, everyone says, oh, you know, we're losing because, you know, birth rate, well, that may be true, you know, 18 years from now or 16 years from now, but today it's still going up. And so if you look at the change from last July, we had 268,644 was that number.
We gotta get 5 million more people over the age of now.
It's 273,785. Okay.
Yeah, so over. It's over 16, right?
Right. That's 16. That's 16 plus.
Yep.
So and non-institutional. So if you're in a nursing home or you're in jail, you don't count. But if you're in a loony bin, but we don't do that anymore. We don't put people in loony bins. But yeah, I mean that used to count. So non-institutional working age population. So you have to subtract that out because otherwise, if you just look at the employed number, you're on a ratio basis. You're going to say, well, employment's going up. Well, no, it's not. The number of people in the workforce available to work that could work. Maybe they want to, maybe they don't, maybe they're disabled, maybe they aren't, whatever. But the fact is it would be rising, and it isn't. So this number, when this has now, you know, I've been tracking my own stuff all the way back into the 1990s. Every time that this has gone, that this has shown a persistent negative slope, you know, a month or two here and there doesn't really mean all that much. But every time this shows something that persists over the space of 6 to 12 months or more, and at this point we're at 18, it has presaged a serious economic dislocation. Every time. It has never been wrong.
Do you think there's a chance that I should have, in retrospect, taken a screenshot of my machine yesterday showing the 4 stocks up and every other stock in my machine down?
Well, you know, when the 4 crack, there goes the market, right?
Without a doubt.
So, I mean, this looks an awful lot like the kind of thing that you saw when, you know, in the first part of 2000, where you had those magnificent ones, you know, Cisco's up every single day, even though nobody else is, and then all of a sudden...
Oracle was, Microsoft was, Intel was.
And the Home Depot was trash, you know, yeah. Kramer's famous screed, you know, a few days before it all went down the toilet. Which, by the way, I mean, how that didn't end up with him, you know, never being invited to a Christmas party again, I don't know. But
well, you're one of your heroes. I'm gonna take a shot at you there. One of your heroes, Larry Kudlow.
Oh my God!
Who used to be on CNBC.
I'm well aware of him.
And he was such a Bush ass kisser. Oh, yeah. Look at that. What was his? It was the Goldilocks economy, the greatest story never told. This is in 2007.
Right, and we know what happened after
that. And then he was appointed the chairman of the economic advisors, right, under Trump.
Well, and then we know what happened. We know what the history on this is. Well, of course, you know, he liked, you know, it's not an allegation.
He's supposed to be a good guy, by the way.
Well, he also liked to stuff his nose. Yeah, you know, well, years ago, yeah, too.
He was in the house with a couple of guys from the trading floor.
So, you know, but here's some kind of interesting situation. So this month is a month that does have significant changes in the educational attainment thing, because June and July tend to have fairly substantial changes, because June, of course, is a month when you have less than high school diploma people tend to spike, and then of course July, as it reports, well, guess who graduates? You know, people, the seniors all graduate in June, right? But it's usually after the survey week, so it shows up in the July report. And in fact, it did. You had a large drop in that number. And you also had, however, so what this means is the employment population ratio of those people who did not, who do not have a high school diploma, actually went up substantially. Okay, or the employment population ratio among that group went from 44.8 to 45.4. That's a big move.
Carl,
But it went down everywhere else, and or is flat. Now, interestingly enough, among degree holders, so 4 years or better, was down three ticks on the employment population ratio. Well, now, that's a very bad number, because those are people who have gone through college and have gotten out, and what this is saying, you know, we've talked about the shifts coming from all the offshoring, all the H-1Bs, and all this, you know, all this stuff, and it's been in this table for a while. It's been a barbell, and I've pointed this out. This is a serious issue from a standpoint of the fill rate in terms of people paying taxes, right? And now it's showing up also, you know, in the employment population ratio in the main tables. So this is not a good thing. This is a punk. Let's just call it a punky report.
In terms of numbers, and one of them just maybe more of a pet peeve of mine, but when I go into the years, what years we were, but when I was in high school, college, maybe not so much high school because you did odd jobs more.
Right.
But in college, virtually everybody I knew, I mean, I talked to Kevin, he worked construction, everybody had a solid 8 week, 9 week job in the summer.
Yeah.
Now,
not no more.
Well, but now you can't even do that. The kid who's he's going to med school, but he I was surprised. The kid's going to an accelerated program in Wisconsin. Their accelerated program is at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay, but he left 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I mean I don't know that even if you were the most, you know, kid who really wanted to pound the pavement, I don't know that you can work 8 weeks in the summer anymore.
Well, I don't know that that's actually being driven by the collegiate thing or whatever have you. I think to some extent that's driven by the fact that, I mean, you know, go up to Mackinac City and go on the island, and you will find that essentially they're all J1. Every single person that works is J1. None of them are American. And so the inherent character of that being a piece of Americana that goes back to, you know, when it was first settled with, you know, the British and everything else, that's gone. Because, I mean, sure, the buildings are still there, but the Americana part of it, that used to all be summer help, all right? And part of what drove the change and drove them to do, the shop owners and stuff to do this, is that everybody turned all the rental, you know, all the stuff that used to be where you came and stayed and, you know, as you did your summer job, they turned those all into Airbnbs. And as a result, there's nowhere for you to sleep. So then what these guys did was the shop owners took old dilapidated hotels and turned them into hot rack flop houses. But no American is going to put up with that crap. Okay? So then you get these people from Romania that are in here, and of course, gee, over there on J1s, gee, we want them all to be white, right? Because, you know, we can't have the Nigerian folks there. That's not Americana. And so, but every single one of the people that's in those places, there are two, no BS, there are two places you can go get a bite and a beer in that town now where they're actually operated and the staff are Americans.
Well, the other thing that, you know, and I don't want to, you know, I think everybody probably knows, my dad was a policeman, so I'm not going to say anything bad about policemen. I'm certainly for them. I have, you know, police foundation plates on my car because I donate.
Yeah.
But, you know, this morning with the advertisement for the ICE agents, they're going to help you out with your federal bill, this and that, you know, bonus. We don't need another secret police force. I did a thing 10 years ago, Carl, and I think I came up with 350,000 people across the country are in security. We don't need another jackboot police force of 100,000. We don't need a 500,000 people here watching people. I mean,
Chief, all you got to do, look, you know my position on this. They all need to leave, okay?
Well, you know,
but this is very.
When you say they all, Chicago is an unusual spot because there's a lot of people here. There's a Hispanic community that went from anybody who came across the border being a crook selling drugs, get them the hell out of here. Nobody disagreed with that. Now it's down to finding the wife in Pilsen that somehow doesn't have her citizenship, that's been here 30 years and has a family. Even get rid of that. But I'm saying I don't want to walk out in the Board of Trade building at night, you know, from our favorite Trader's Bar, and see four able-bodied people standing there. Security. I mean, how bad do the rest of us have to be? How much better would we be? They're all nice people. They're all... I don't know. Maybe they got a...
Chief,
they need a regular job that does nothing for anybody.
Chief, that's... look, you having a classical training in economics, I don't understand how anybody who has a basic understanding, who's taken one economics class, first semester, okay, I don't understand how anybody can argue against the basic law of supply and demand.
You can't. Well, the government does a pretty good job of screwing that up to the point where most people don't even understand it.
Yeah, I understand that. But you do argue against it all the time when it comes to this stuff, because the reality is that the demand, if you have a problem with being able to pay for housing, if you kill 30 million people who want housing, if you kill that demand, the price is going to go down, and not a little. And so, and by the way, the people who are going to get the most benefit of that are going to be the people on the lower end of the demand.
To a certain extent, but some stuff has happened, and it's, I piece this together. That's why we complement each other. I piece it together. I've heard four or five allegedly really bright people, some from the administration, some not, talk about how we are. We don't have enough housing now for everybody. We have our building levels have been down for 5-6 years, and we need this quote low cost housing. Well, you look at the housing prices, even as high as they've become, Carl, for a long period of time, housing, even though it was going up less than the cost to replace the damn place. So even though the house went from 250 to 350. The idea, these are people that obviously have never been in the trades, have never seen anybody or helped somebody remodel a house, or either just don't pay attention. There's no way on earth anybody, you look at some of these houses, and unfortunately I was helping somebody out with a horrible thing that happened at our firm, and there's people in Mississippi and Alabama and places, I think you could buy a house for $125,000. I don't think you could replace it for less than $250,000.
Yeah, but you have to. But do realize that there's that part of the problem with this, and it's kind of serious, is that we have within that realm, when that happens, okay, what you're seeing there that nobody is talking about is what's really going on there is depletion. In other words, I'm not maintaining a sink. And I got into it with the school district down in Florida when I lived down there, because they pulled this crap and then they tried to come back at us with a demand for a tax increase. And I said, and they're like, well, these roofs need to be replaced, these chillers need to be replaced in the cafeterias, to keep the food safe, and da 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 da. I said, no, you all need to go to jail, because a roof has a design service life, a chiller has a design service life. All these things have reached the end of that period of time, and you didn't put any money into a sinking fund in order to pay for them. Okay? And so
Nobody does. The only people who do, that I know of, well, I'm sure there's more.
But see, Chief, when you get to where housing shows the same pattern, this does not tell you that you have to bring in more brown people that don't have any education to nail on roofs in order to solve the problem and drive the price down. Of building new houses. What it tells you is that for the last 10 years or 20 years, people have not had a sinking fund that they've been running in order to replace the roof on their existing house.
In the city of... nobody does that.
Well, guess what? People like me do it because I know that eventually my roof is going to have to be replaced.
The shocker is, I get an air conditioner. As a matter of fact, we need one of the place building replaced. I get an air conditioner. It was $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, they last 15 years. All right, well, 15 years from now, I'll get a new air conditioner. Well, 15 years later, it's $5,500. There's if it was Chief, the same $25,000 or $3,000, I wouldn't even worry about it. But it isn't.
Chief, why is it $5,500?
Because we have a Federal Reserve and a bunch of presidents that love pumping money in for themselves.
Well, actually, that's not where about half of that came from. About half of that came from the fact that when it comes to the ramp job that occurred with regards to specifically air conditioners.
Okay, but you can't, when we're talking prices, one thing I hope everybody would, and I know you know this, you can point to individual stuff, but it's general price level. I didn't have a chance to tell you this. I was on a show with Joan Esposito the other day, and a nice lady, but she's on this progressive radio thing. Mm-hmm. And people call in, and you know, I think she's terrific, but the I listened in earlier because I want to know kind of who the hell I'm dealing with, basically.
Right.
And there's a lady on talking about prices of food, and tomatoes are this and chickens that, but watch out for the peach, you know. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God, I'm going to get asked about price levels, and I'm going to start talking about money supply and general price level and how
individual
stuff goes up and down, and that's kind of healthy. And at the end of the day, the general price level is controlled by essentially the amount of money in the system versus the amount of growth. Do you think anybody had any idea what I was talking about?
Oh, absolutely not. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, you just saw it. There was just this story that was in the local media. They're making a big stink about it. A guy who has been a Vols basketball supporter forever. Okay, like, you know, 40 years. All right. He's like 80 now. And he donated to build the Food City Center, which is, you know, it's called a bowling center technically, but they call it the Food City Center because guess who has the marquee advertising on it, right?
Okay.
Well, it's the indoor arena that's next door to the Vols football stadium. All right. And I've seen events in there. It's actually a really nice place. Anyway, his season ticket price tripled.
Oh yeah.
For this coming year. All right. Now, that's a step function. 1 year, a tripling.
Yep.
All right. And he's like, now, wait a minute. All right. You know, I'm one of the reasons you SOBs put this effing place up. Okay. And he is, because he donated to the building fund. He's not lying. And so, you know, but this is the problem that comes in with things like this is, you know, the externality that, of course, caused this is all the NIL stuff, all right, which showed up in the interim period of time from when that place was established. And now, you know, here we are, and it's flowing back into costs. And, oh, by the way, that cost has to be covered somehow. Guess who ends up getting hit for it, right? It shows up in the ticket prices. All right, but...
Well, if you choose to sponsor a professional team, you got to pay for it, bud.
Well, hello, all right, but it wasn't a professional team when he did this, okay? Now all of a sudden it is because, you know, we had this externality change, all right? Same thing's true here with the air conditioner, all right? You have all these people that say, you know, for example, the argument that was made, I'll give you just one example that's in electronics that I happen to have chased the numbers on. All of the newer uninterruptible power supplies have to meet a particular energy efficiency standard. This was an Obama thing, all right? You could not sell the older ones. So at a certain point, all of the older design ones that didn't meet that standard could no longer be sold in the new marketplace at all. In order to meet that standard, essentially the gist of it was you had to have a second trickle charger in there for when the unit is not on battery, it's not backing up your computer, because the main charging unit isn't efficient enough. It's only 85% efficient putting energy into the battery. But you can design this little trickle charger board that's 95% efficient to put this little to keep the battery maintained when it's not actually charging it. Okay, so now what we've done is we've added $50 or $100 to the price of the unit, because you have to have this other board in there, right? that wasn't there before at all. By the way, that's a failure point that wasn't there before either, okay, that can break. If it does, the unit doesn't work, all right? So now this $2,000 piece of equipment is trash, and you've doubled the number of critical failure points in the unit that render it inoperable.
There's a million. It's the same argument.
Chief, do you know how much... All right, so guess what? I have one of these older ones, and I have one of the newer ones, too.
What you're describing is a healthy economy.
No, I'm not, because here's the thing. Do you know what the difference is in electrical cost for me to run one versus the other over a year?
Well, what I'm saying is, when I say healthy, I'm not talking about the individual product, but I'm saying we're supposed to go up and down all the time. We're not supposed to be like Russia, where everything is locked in. Supply and demand makes all the difference in the world.
Chief, I get that. Point is this. If I want to buy one of these things today, I'm forced to buy the one that saves me less
money
over the course of its service life, because it breaks twice as often than the delta in the cost. And I can't buy the older one at all because the government made it illegal.
Funny how you should mention this, my clairvoyant friend. The air conditioner that I'm talking about.
Same thing with the air conditioner, by the way.
The old Freon that the old one goes in, the old one needs, it's down some. All right, so my guy tells me,
yeah, and it's stupidly expensive because it was made illegal.
I'm with you. What he said is it's going to cost you $700 or $800 to top it off. We're going to have to put, you know, the dust in there to find the leak. It's going to leak some more. We'll fix the leak, and oh, by the way, it's another $700-$800. You're up to $2,000 on a 16-year-old unit. Why not? Hell, just buy a new one for $4,000.
But if
the stuff was $150 like it ought to be, I'd push this one another 4 years.
Well, that's right, because the gas should have been $100.
Yeah,
but it's not.
But I mean, at 16, is the thing going? Yeah, but it probably has a few years left if you just goosed it.
Well, exactly. But see, this is the thing: is that these are externalities that are imposed for stupid reasons.
The general price level is you're not as old. I remember this. You talk about people vilifying people back in 73, and the inflation really started. It wasn't that the Fed was putting money in. It wasn't the Bretton Woods going over. It wasn't them deflating the currency to pay off the debt from the Vietnam War. It was those dirty friggin' Arabs with the oil embargo. It was all them. It wasn't them. Well, they didn't help, for sure.
Well, they didn't help anything, exactly.
Yeah, but in a normal situation, the price of oil or gas would have gone up and the other stuff would have gone down, which wouldn't have been good for the other people because they're supplying this is simple. If all of a sudden I have $100 to spend and now instead of $10 a month, I'm spending $12 on gas because that went up for some external reason, guess what? I've only got $88 to spend on the other stuff instead of $90. And if you learn anything about economics, somewhere along the line, that other $2 coming out of 150 million people's pocket causes other stuff to go down in demand and then decrease just a little bit. Maybe it's a penny or two across the board, right? I mean, that's...
Well, yeah.
But how many people have any idea what I just said?
Well, almost none. But here's the thing, Chief. I've only got so many dollars to spend in a
month. That's exactly right.
If you make me spend some of it in one place, I have less to spend somewhere else.
That's exactly right. And you know what I haven't heard this term in ages. I don't know why I just thought of it. When you spend money on something, you know what the economic term for that is?
When you spend...
If you buy something.
Well, it's called consumption.
It's called a dollar vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have voted for that product.
I voted with my wallet.
Yes. You voted with your wallet for that product.
Right.
But the thing I'm surprised that, you know, Kevin was mentioning earlier, by the way, he's not the only one. I don't think since I did a couple of finals on tariffs. I get this stuff. Every individual product is going to have its own issue. Will somebody on the other side eat some of the cost? Will the person here eat some of the cost? Will the full tariff reach the consumer? In virtually every case, the answer is no.
Okay. Yeah, that's correct.
But in some cases, it might be 100% if it's just, hey, you're buying cocoa from a place, there's no other place to get it,
Right.
Guess what?
But in most places, that's not going to be.
In most places, that's not the case. Right. But the fact is, it's not going to be zero. And the problem I have with the Trumpers is I actually we had a, I was like arguing with this the other day, but it might have been John. I said, okay, the administration has come out with a number that's $660 billion. I'm going to say that number's high. All right. And somebody.
I'll take the under on that.
Yeah, but then John said to me, well, it's nowhere near that number. John, wait a minute. He's your guy. I'm your friend. I'm agreeing with you. It's not. Why is it that he's not an ass for saying the number was 660 instead of me saying it's probably not going to be that much? I'm using their number. Why are you jumping on me for it? Okay, right. So say the number's 440 or 400 or 350. It's not zero. And the 350 is coming out of our hide. And no matter how you cut it, right?
Yeah. Well, not all of it. So here's the.
I'm saying, whatever it ends up being, it's out of your hide.
Well, hold on a minute. No, I'm going to push back on you on this. Not all of it is. The part that I pay is out of my hide.
Yes.
Okay. So if the tariff is 25% and 15 of it gets paid by somebody in the United States, which ultimately is me, right? Because
yeah.
I consumed it. All right. The other 10 gets eaten by the guy in China.
Right.
In a lower margin.
And it may get eaten by the merchant here, but again,
No. Sure, no. I'm going to assume it gets eaten outside the United States.
No, don't do that.
Because if it gets eaten by somebody here, then it is coming out of someone here's wallet.
Okay, this is let me try this one more time. This is very, and you know what I'm talking about. This is very simple. Go back to Mercedes's and Cadillacs. Okay,
yeah.
the Mercedes costs 50, the Cadillac costs 40. All of a sudden, you put in a 10% tariff. Well, okay.
And the Cadillac seller raises
right.
Oh,
no, wait a minute. First thing that happens is the Mercedes guy goes, oh, wait a minute. We can't be 15 grand more than the Cadillac. It's too
right.
much. We're going to lower it on our end by 2 grand.
Right. Right.
So now coming in, it's now, which it, plus it's probably coming in not at 50, it's probably coming in at 45. Right now, because it's not going to come in at retail price. It's going to come in at,
right.
say, it's wholesale. So really, the number's not 50, it's 45 to start with. I'm trying to help the Trump here. Okay, so now the 10% is no longer 5 grand, it's 4,500.
Right.
Right, so now the, it's so now we're up to, where are we? We're up to 49 something something, not 50.
Right.
So, actually, no, because they came 2,000 off. We're up to like 47.5 instead of 50.
Yeah.
It's that, but now somebody's paying that number here, and
right.
now the dealer here might say, "I'll take $1,000 off the profit."
Right.
All right. So now we're paying $4,500 in tariffs, but now that guy ate $2,000 and the dealer here ate $1,000. So you're only out $2,500, actually $1,500, right? But the dealer here is out $1,000. Okay. So but now that's money that he's not making being spent here.
Right.
And Cadillac might say, hey, this is cool. They're up $2,200. I'm going to raise mine $1,000.
Right.
So, but at the end of the day, this check is still going to the government from a combination of that dealer and you. The guy in Europe, now assuming they are now importers of other stuff, they've now got $2,000 less to spend on U.S. stuff.
Chief, I get all that.
But I'm saying, but it's all just a big flow. But at the end of the day, yes, it's not going to be $5,000, or
right.
because first of all, you're talking about a list price versus the wholesale. But say it's going to be $4,500. Somebody is going to pay for that. It is a tax. You can't say
you got to wait
till it ends up to see where it lands. Yes, I'll wait up to see where it lands between 4 to 5. It's not going to be zero. Sorry.
Well, no, it's not going to be zero. But the other point that I was making is that to the extent that the guy in China pays it, okay, that he forks it up and he swallows.
He lowers his price.
Well,
okay.
But to the extent that he does that, that cash flow that comes into Treasury comes from outside the United States, and from a
payer. But it's not a cash flow at all. He just lowers his price. The cash flow comes from you.
Well, now wait a minute. No, he doesn't lower his price. If that is what, if the tariff has to be collected when the goods land, if he ends up writing the check.
The check comes from the importer. The only way he can influence...
I get this. I'm saying, one way or another, okay, the idea that all of this ends up coming out of a U.S. person's hide is BS. Some of it will come from the importer's hide, okay? Some of it, though, will come from the producer's hide outside the United States. And where the balance is an unknown at this point to a large degree.
Okay, but you're saying that the Mercedes, the guy's going to eat the entire $5,000.
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, then if he doesn't...
Of course I'm not.
All right, well...
Of course I'm not. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that economically, on a total balance basis, a tariff is not inflationary because it reduces the deficit by the same amount of tax collected. To the extent that I can make the foreign
entity... I never once said it was inflationary. I said it was an aggressive tax.
I understand that. But I'm saying, to the extent that I can make the foreign entity pay it instead of someone in the United States economy, all right, no matter how I manage to do this, to the extent that I can make the foreign entity pay
it... We're way over time, but let me inject one in for you for Tuesday. We seem to have a guy who somehow thinks that putting other countries out of business is good for us. He's out of his friggin' mind. Well, if you put the world in it, the idea that...
Who says he's putting out... Where's this... That somebody is having their margins reduced is putting them out of business?
Buddy,
look at the stock market, for Christ's sake.
Okay, don't do that. So if the stock market... What if the stock market goes down today? Now he's at a bad day? The stock market is going up because we're putting money in a system.
Well, he thinks it's a bad day.
Okay, but... My point is, if
the stock market's going up because what happened with fiscal deficit and rates are 4, so the cost of borrowing is -3.
I'm going to jump on board here for like 30 seconds, and we got to go. Everybody in the world is our enemy. They've been screwing us forever. No matter what happens, they're our enemy.
Oh my God!
If we put every single one of them into a recession, it's good for us. No, it's not.
Chief, I've never made that argument.
I know that, but that's what's bouncing around.
Well, you know what? People are welcome to argue whatever load of BS they want.
How many people today are convinced Switzerland's our desperate enemy and we have to screw them with a 35% tariff when they don't have any tariffs?
You and I both know that supposedly China does not have a lot of tariffs on a lot of things.
You and I
can't sell things there at all, which means the tariff is infinite.
We have made a ceasefire on China in the sense that you and I both know that's a special case.
It's not a special case, and by the way,
well, in terms of the child labor and the fact that they're arming themselves to kick our ass, they're a special case.
Okay. However, PC Engines, which I brought up on the show before, was a bunch of American guys that set up the assembly of these boxes I used to buy over in Switzerland.
I get it.
And there was absolutely no reason to do that unless they were somehow able to arbitrage.
I just hope one of your Tennessee relatives, that's why I put that one in there, your Tennessee relatives need choppers because those bastards over at Liechtenstein, we put a big tariff on them and all they export is false teeth.
Well, you know, at some point maybe I'll end up needing them and I'll have to pay that tariff now, won't I?
But just remember, they are your enemy.
You know what I'm going to do, Chief? I'm going to get on a plane, I'm going to go over to Liechtenstein, and I'm going to import them in my mouth and they'll never know.
You know what? I bet they'll find a way to find you. Have a nice weekend, bud. SP Futures down 64, NASDAQ Futures down 280. You know, there still are a lot of people who need false teeth. Boy, if you don't have enough calcium, they can't do the implants. That must be awful.
Oh, by the way, the implants are for most people are probably a bad deal.
Anyway, we'll worry about that later.
We can go into that some other time.
Let's hope the market's doing better on Tuesday. As of right now, we're down 65 points. Be back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
Down 600.
That's all, folks.